you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? It is Ralph Sutton, the SDR show. What a goddamn legend do we have on the show for you today. The lead singer of Men at Work. It is Colin Hay. And we just get some great stories from him. And even though we were told he wasn't, he does perform live. Super cool dude. And even teaches me how to properly make a Vegemite sandwich, which that I felt like we had to do. We do it every single Wednesday, every single Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time live. But if you're listening to this now, it means you heard it 5 days later. And if you're a Colin Hay fan, you could have got it 5 days ago hearing him sing a song. So go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use the code SDR, get a 7-day free trial, 20% off, access to 21 other shows, 35 hours of entertainment every week, I think, something like that, all for that one price at $8 or $9.50 without the code. But really, just share the love, get the word out there, talk about the show, get people to listen to the show. And here it is right now, the Colin Hay episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, it is James Madden, who just got back to New York City. Thanks for coming back, James.
Buddy, I'm honored. I'm not in a mansion this time, but this is going to be spectacular.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no other way to describe this gentleman other than the fact that I'm 52 years old and this man provided the soundtrack to my life for most of my life. I just found out some interesting news about him today that we'll get into as well. But let's just introduce him right away. It is Colin Hay. Colin Hay, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Good afternoon to you all.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me ask you this. Before we get into anything, literally, because this is how the world works in social media, I'm doing Colin Hay research, right? I'm looking up Colin Hay stuff so I feel like I understand who you are as a person, and then find out, oh, just announced Men at Work is doing dates with Rick Springfield this summer.
Yeah.
When's the last time you guys did that? Did a tour as Men at Work? I think it was seven years ago.
It's not the old band. It's just me and my LA-based band. So it's really just doing a completely Men at Work set list, really.
Right.
We did a tour of Europe a couple of years ago with the same band. Mm-hmm. And we did some dates late last year. So so it's really just going out as Men at, playing a Men at Work set list. I mean, I toured for 6 years with Greg from 96 until 2002. Mm-hmm. And then, Greg passed away a number of years ago. And I don't know, it's just people keep on asking me about it. I think it came from when I was out on one of the Ringo tours. And people reacted so strongly to the songs. I just thought, oh, maybe I'll put a tour together and call it Men at Work. So I'm just doing that now and again, you know.
As a stupid neophyte question, is it right to assume that you could command far more of a figure going out as far as financially under the name Men at Work than you do as Colin Hay? Because especially in America, most Americans are stupid and we see a name that we recognize like Men at Work. Just like I worked with 80s rock bands a long time ago. The singer could go out by himself and would get a tenth of the money. But if he goes out as the band Cinderella, he would make more money. Is that part of it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Men at Work as a brand is much better known than Colin Hay. But I am catching up on myself, as it were. I'm coming up from behind. I haven't overtaken, but I can see the car up ahead of me. I think I'm gonna take him around the next bend.
Let me say some things. Okay. So I watched the entire 2015 documentary that was waiting for my real life documentary that I fucking loved. If no one's seen the documentary about your life, it really is worth watching, because that was powerful, great stuff. I want to just touch on a few things that I didn't know. Like, you are Scottish and you moved to Australia when you were 14, and you described it in a very unique way as leaving black and white and walking into Technicolor.
Yeah, that's right.
And well, because?
Well, Scotland's a beautiful country, but it rains all the time. So it tends to be pretty gray most of the time. So the impression that I think about Scotland, it's kind of in black and white. Mm-hmm. And when I went to Australia, it was like Technicolor, because everything was just brighter and it was sunny, and you'd go to the ocean and the ocean waves were huge. And yeah, it was kind of like going to, I imagined what going to California would be like, except it wasn't California, it was the other side of the world. But there were lots of similarities to it, just culturally and the surfing culture for one thing, and it was much more, or at least it had, pretensions of having more egalitarianism as opposed to system in Britain, which was still quite, sectarian, and, Protestants and Catholics. And it was very, there was a strong class system. So there was less of that in Melbourne, where I went to.
Right. Did you ever actually pick up surfing or no?
No, not really. I have surfed, but I didn't continue. I just sat in my bedroom and played guitar, and then I started playing in bands. But probably, all of my friends became surfers, and indeed some of them still do surf. I still have close friends in Melbourne who still surf, and so that's a connection that I have with mainly to the ocean.
As a 6'6" guy, I always feel that my center of gravity is too high, and I'm not made for surfing. Any sort of balancey things, I've always sucked at. I tell myself it's because I'm tall. I don't know if it's true, but it makes me sleep at night.
I don't think it is. I think it's just your rationalization. You can't be bothered surfing, so you need some kind of excuse. So you go, oh, I'm too tall.
That's exactly. That is exactly it, Colin. By the way, also, I've always told myself the reason why I'm shitty at guitar is because I'm left-handed and I learned to play right-handed, but you play left-handed as well, right?
No, I'm right-handed.
Oh, you're right-handed. I thought I saw you playing left-handed somewhere. I don't know why. Maybe I'm dreaming.
No.
Wait, yes, James.
Yeah, Ralph, you do know there's left-handed guitarists. There's been
but when I was a kid, there was no left-handed guitars. You couldn't find them. I mean, I'm old, man.
That's the effort. Paul McCartney. Flip them around.
Do you think I have the skill level? You think I have the skill level of Paul McCartney?
Excuse me.
Come on now.
I think you're not good at guitar because you can't surf.
I'm saying that when I was a kid, I couldn't find it easily, is what I'm saying.
No, but anyway. I'm trying to get a word in here. Paul McCartney was a fucking left-handed guitar.
Right. I know that, but what I'm saying is I learned right-handed because I'm left-handed because I couldn't find left-handed guitars. Does that make sense?
You couldn't find left-handed guitars.
Right. When I was a kid
every store had one.
Albany. I was in Albany, New York. I tried three times and I said, fuck it. I'm getting a right-handed guitar. I'm being guitar shamed.
Ralph, you're making finding a left-handed guitar in the 80s sound like trying to find the Ark of the Covenant. Like you're not Indiana Jones. You could just turn it upside goddamn down.
These are how I rationalize my existence, James. It's how I rationalize my existence.
Oh my goodness.
So to go back to you coming to Australia. This is what I love. You're going to high school. You meet what I would consider your writing partner at the time, Ron Stryker, and just kind of start things click for you at that point. I think you were originally in a band called Lasting Impressions or something like that. But over the years,
Deeper Impression.
Sorry, I would close enough.
Deep Impression.
Okay. Yeah. I knew I was close. I knew it was something like that. And
we left no impression basically.
But when you met Ron, one of the first few songs you wrote was Who Can It Be Now and Down Under. Those are the first songs, some of the first songs that you guys put together. Is that correct?
Well, I wrote Who Can It Be Now by myself. But Ron was a very inspiring guy. He was a beautiful guitar player. I'm sure he still is. So we didn't really write all that much together, but he definitely opened a creative door for me. That's what happened, really, and hopefully vice versa.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is you guys started doing a residency at a place called something like Cricket's Arms, or I'm screwing up the name, I'm sure.
The Cricketer's Arms.
Yeah, Cricketer's Arms. It sounds much more Australian than the way I put it. And it's a kind of an interesting full circle that I noticed in the documentary is that you started doing that all the time to the point where you guys got so popular that it was almost like we have to give these guys a record deal. Like you were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. There is this stratospheric chaos of 81 where the Men at Work becomes the biggest band in the world. We in America were very late to the party. Like it was already big everywhere else. And Men at Work finally comes out in the United States, and which I didn't know this until this week studying you. I thought some of the other songs like Overkill and It's a Mistake were on the same record as the first record because the releases came out so close to each other in the United States. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. That was our classic blunder.
Well, not your fault, I don't think, but that's what happened, right? Like it was.
No, it was. It was our fault.
Can you elaborate?
Well, the record company in America, who were very late to the party on the first record, we were kind of annoyed by them because of the fact that they were so late and they rejected the album a couple of times. And they wanted to hold back the release of the second album, which was this clearly the smart thing to do because the first album was still on the charts. Mm-hmm. But we insisted that they release the second album along, you know, with to coincide with the rest of the world. And I think it ultimately was not helpful for us.
Right. Because I never even remember this as a kid, but there was so much Men at Work on the radio. Radio stations were doing no Men at Work days for a little while just because there was so much Men at Work at the time, which it's crazy to think that. It's amazing. And then what I love is that. So the band disbands for various reasons. We don't need to get into them all, but you start doing solo stuff. I mean, now you're so prolific. It's 15 solo records at this point, and we'll get into the new album. And I think you put two out, one last year, one this year. But you start doing a residency in California. So this is the part that I found that was so interesting, how cyclical life can be. 10 years earlier, you're doing a residency at the Cricketer's Arms, become a superstar band, things change. Now, 10 years later or a little more, you're doing a residency in California. And then that starts to build and show people, oh, look, this gets a whole different vibe. He's a storyteller. He's doing things acoustic. And that's what kind of ignited the Colin Hay part of your life. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that's basically, I came to California to wipe the slate clean and start again. And started playing at Largo in Hollywood, that's owned by an Irish friend of mine called Flanagan, who still owns it. I still play there. And it enabled me just to kind of regroup, as it were. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. And then I started going on the road and going on tour. And it just built from there, pretty much word of mouth.
Right. Because you went, I mean, there was a quote that you said, which I can't even imagine, you know, a couple of years apart, you went from playing from 100,000 people to one night you played for 8 people. Yeah. It's crazy. It's amazing that it didn't more permanently screw up your brain that you were able to say, I can regroup and rebuild, which is wild.
Well, maybe it has, and I'm just unaware of it.
It's very possible.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And by the way, I can say this, in watching some of your stuff, you and your wife, Cecilia, you look so fucking happy together. I've not seen that in a while. It just looked like you guys in that 5 minutes that you're on camera together just look so goddamn happy. It's hilarious.
Yeah, we get along fine. You know, we have our moments, but, you know, we can hang pretty good.
It's pretty great. And then things like little tidbits, and then we'll get into the new stuff. I was shocked to learn that Who Can It Be Now, the sax solo showed up 2 minutes in originally, and somebody had the idea to move it to the front.
Yeah, that was a classic case of playing live and the saxophone hook not appearing, you know, as you say, for a couple of minutes into the song, just because the groove was working so well in a live setting. But Peter McKee and the record producer very wisely said, well, you know, no radio programmer is going to wait for 2 minutes before he, you know, to be satisfied by, you know, until he hears the saxophone hook. So why don't you put that up the front of the song? And we thought, oh, brilliant. What a great idea. So that worked really well. So the first thing you hear is that dum dum ba ba da 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 da. So which was fabulous. It really was the first thing that people heard from us, and was quite quite memorable, I must say.
Absolutely, yes, James. You look like you're chomping at the bit, James.
Well, no, I heard a rumor that the reason initially the saxophone player wasn't going to be until 2 minutes was because he was left-handed and he just didn't know
he couldn't find out.
He couldn't find
the left-handed saxophone.
Yeah, Paul McCartney bought all of them.
Yes.
Paul McCartney bought all of them.
Scouring all the stores, trying to find one so he could be in the first minute and 58 seconds.
Yeah.
Very possible. And then also with Down Under, that was written originally on like Coke bottles. And then you just kind of built it off of that. The crazy thing is most of what we know, me as, again, I'm 52, learning about Australia as a kid came from listening to Men at Work songs. You think I knew what this was? I didn't know what this was.
Wow. I still don't. For the interview, Ralph. Holy shit.
I still have never tried it. I was dating an Australian girl, and she brought it to me. This I literally unrelated to you before it was booked. She came back to the United States, and she brought me this, and I've never tried
it. How long ago did she bring you that? It's probably past its expiration.
No. Day. We're talking like 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago. Yeah, it says here it's good until December of this year. So we're good. Are you a fan? Are you a fan of Vegemite?
I like it a lot. Yeah.
I've never tasted it. Have you, James?
No, you should. I mean, you try a drug once a year on the air. You should try Vegemite once a year.
Yeah, what you have to do is get a slice of multigrain bread and toast it quite well toasted, and then put a liberal slathering of your favorite butter on there, and then just a little bit of Vegemite.
Okay.
And if you're really adventurous, you can have a little side of avocado with black pepper.
Okay. It's almost like a Australian version of avocado toast. If you throw in
the Australians invented avocado toast in Sydney.
Really?
In a restaurant called Bill's and in Surrey Hills. And they invented the avocado toast. And of course the Americans have appropriated that as can be seen by a very, very small example of cultural arrogance. we invented avocado toast. Wow. No, you didn't.
This is the.
But anyway, it's a great thing. It's actually, you know who invented it? You know who used to have it? Surfers. Australian surfers used to have avocado toast because you can get a bit of bread and avocado and off you go.
Well, I just put my finger in the Vegemite and I'm going to taste it for the first time in my life.
Do it.
It's very salty.
Yeah.
A little yeasty. I don't even know what it is, but
well, it's yeast and salt.
Oh,
it's from the beer industry. They have all this yeast left over, and so at some point, a couple of Australians got together and said, "What do you reckon we should do with all this yeast, Bob? I reckon we ought to make a sandwich spread with it, Robbo."
Well, I'll tell you what. I feel confident that my taste buds work. I nailed the two ingredients. It's salty and yeasty, and that is what's in it.
You don't have long COVID.
No, I don't. I don't have long COVID. Good.
Ralph, does this compete with the time you tried ecstasy live on the air?
Yeah, maybe. By the way, so then the acoustic version of Overkill, which kind of reignited your career, came from those shows that you were doing at Largo, right? That's when you were starting to do everything acoustically, correct?
Well, yes and no. I mean, a lot of the songs were written acoustically. Like Down Under was written on acoustic guitar. Down Under came from a little cassette, like you were talking about before. Ron had a little cassette of this little groove that he had. And he originally played, there were different levels of liquid in little bottles. And he would do that little percussive thing at the start of it. Went dun ding tick-a-dum, tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-dum. So that was constant. And he played a little bass riff on top of it, just going dun tick-a-dum, tick-a-dum. And then he gave it to me. And I was a mesmerizing little recording which had a trance-like quality. So I just would drive along in the car listening to it. So that's where the song came from.
Yeah, and then
but the other songs were written on acoustic guitar, pretty much, you know. So it felt like just returning to how they were originally, as opposed to, you know, they, you know, of them being electric and then playing them acoustically. Although the first time people became aware of them, certainly was through the band. But
yeah, I think didn't Ron say once that he preferred it more when it was just the two of you, and that's what he wanted more than anything. Like, it was just, he didn't like it being a big band.
Well, you'd have to talk to him about that, but I don't think he was that. From what I can remember, I don't think he was really that that thrilled with Men at Work. He liked what we did before that, which was much more experimental, a bit more meandering, if you like. But who knows? I don't know.
Fair enough.
Been a long time since I've spoken with Ron.
All right, before we go any further, if you're an auto mechanic, or maybe you're just a do-it-yourself guy who likes to work on his own cars, have I got news for you. It's rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best goddamn prices, your one-stop shop for everything auto parts. rockauto.com has been in the business for 20 years, and they make it easy for you to find all the parts you need for your car at the best goddamn prices. No more talking to counter guys who need to order the part, don't even know if they have it. They got to look it up for you. And then even after all that shit, you're still going to pay storefront markups. But not at rockauto.com. They make it easy to find everything you need, whether you're an auto mechanic, an auto shop, or just some cool dude working on his own car. You all have access to the same incredible pricing at rockauto.com. Maybe you just want to peruse the website and you just might find something you love. How do we know they have the best goddamn prices? Simple. There's no discount code, no promo code needed. Just go to rockauto.com. And when you buy something, say, yo, I heard about them on the SDR show. Thank you, rockauto.com. Let's get back into it. What I was saying before, by the way, just funny, is that so much of Australia, I learned from listening to it. Like, I didn't know what Vegemite was. All that, even to know it was called Down Under when I was a kid, right? But then I watched, which made me not feel so bad, you being interviewed by Dick Clark and him asking, where is Melbourne? So then I'm like, all right, maybe I'm not the only idiot at the time that he didn't know where Melbourne was. So it felt full circle.
The whole of the country didn't really know where Australia was, really. But that's, that's probably the fault of the American education. Geography in schools wasn't really big on people's agenda.
Yeah. Yes, James.
Pre-internet, like, Australia seemed like almost like a rumor. Like, as a kid in the 80s, it was like, we think there's a seventh continent. It's really low. Maybe one day you'll get there. It takes 3 weeks to fly there. Go out there.
Well, that was certainly the case in the United States, which is sad, because in the rest of the world, it's not the case.
Yeah.
The rest of the world knows and knew where Australia was. That's the sad thing in a country like the United States, who's completely unaware of not only where Australia is, but where anywhere is.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And by the way, there's a video, very famous video, of a guy trying to explain on YouTube, and he's not joking, that Australia doesn't exist. I've sent this to all of my Australian friends over the years, where he explains, proving that Australia does not exist, and it's a world ruse that's been going on for decades.
Does he play for the Nets? Awesome, Colin. Does it upset you, like, when you came to America? And I've noticed this for years of emceeing and warming up crowds. Americans always, if someone's from Austria, they ask how the kangaroos are. Does that, like, burn your ass? Notice Austria and Australia, if you're from, like, Alabama, all due respect, they confuse the shit out of that. And Sweden and Switzerland blows people's minds. Those four countries, people have no idea that there's one's not the other.
It is amazing.
Yeah, well, when we were walking across the car park in Texas, this good old boy said to us, "Hey, where are you boys all from?" We said, "We're from Australia." And he said, "Oh yeah, how's Grace Kelly doing down there?" I have no idea what he meant.
Well, Grace Kelly didn't she become like the
queen of Princess of Monaco. Which is in Europe, which is only a couple of day bus ride from Austria.
Yeah. Yeah. So it kind of all ties together if you think about it, right?
Very loosely.
Yeah. And also, by the way, it was wild that your first big U.S. tour was opening for Fleetwood Mac. And by the end of the tour, you guys had the number one album in the country and theirs dropped to number three. It's just wild. I know you talk very openly about how the Beatles were a big inspiration to you. And then for years, and still, I think to this day, you are associated with the Ringo Starr All-Star Band. You still are, correct?
Yes. Well, I did. I've done a few tours. I'm playing with them at the moment. You know, it's like being called. If you get called, you go and play because it's Ringo. You know, it's the top of the food chain. It's the governor. You know, the boss.
Right. That's pretty wild. Yeah. I mean, is there one happening now? Is there one happening soon or no?
Yeah. After this solo tour that I'm on, there's the Ringo tour. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And then there's the big Men at Work, Rick Springfield dates, yeah, too.
And then, right, then there's more Ringo, and then there's solo stuff in Australia, which takes me to November. So if I actually think about it right now, it's exhausting to think about it. But I'm just taking it like any self-respecting recovering alcoholic, a day at a time.
It's a good way to look at it. And on that, last year, I mean, we all had a lot of time on our hands. And you actually put out a cover. Well, not all covers. I think there's an original two on there called "I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself."
No, it's all covers.
It's all covers. Okay, that song itself is a cover. I just don't know what to do myself. Yeah. Who did that one originally?
Burt Bacharach and Hal David wrote it.
Oh, I didn't know that. So the others I knew. I didn't know that song. I love the one you
Dusty,
did. The old
Dusty Springfield had a big hit with it in the early 60s, 64, I think.
I like the Faces cover. I always like that song. That's a great song.
Yeah.
And that was done literally through like, I'm home. I don't got much going on, so I'm going to record a covers record.
Yeah, well, it wasn't even that conscious. I was sitting down in the studio and I was reading about Jerry Marsden from Jerry and the Pacemakers, who had just died recently. And I started playing the chords to Don't Let the Sun Catch You Crying. And I just liked it. So I recorded it. And then I sent it to my friend, Chad Fisher. And he said, oh, this is cool. He orchestrated it and said, send me some more. So I just kept on sending him songs because it was just fun to do. And then all of a sudden we realized that we were halfway through what would become the covers record.
That's wild. And then you follow it up with it just came out a couple of weeks ago. I think it's your 15th record called Now and the Evermore, which is out now. The first single was called Love Is Everywhere. And the video features, it's a lot of green screen stuff. But one of the main things, and I think it's also the album cover, is the street you grew up in Scotland.
Yeah. Yeah, where we had the music shop. Because between the age of 5 and 14, between the years of, I think it was 58 until 67, we had a music shop. Yeah, which was a pretty glorious way to grow up if you're a kid, to be surrounded by not only music, but the music that was made during that time, which is certainly one of the golden ages, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty wild. And also, which is, I think, probably the most important thing about that video is your cute little dog, Rico, makes it into the video as well. So that really.
Well, yeah, it's there's no show without Punch, really. He's the star of our show. He's our leading man.
And then. Just a couple other things. I know we don't have all the time in the world, but we have a couple other things we have to get to. But the wild thing is, I think it was last year, you re-recorded Down Under and it became a dance hit. How did that come about?
A young Australian kid did a version of it. They asked me for a new vocal. So I sent him a re-recorded vocal and he dropped that into his drum and bass track and put it out. And it's gone pretty crazy in different parts of the world. I think it's top 10 in the UK and in different parts of the world. It's doing very well. So yeah, for a song that took 40 minutes to write, was released 40 years ago, it's a supreme example of the randomness of the universe and how brilliant that can be.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about that, again, I didn't know this until I looked it up, but there was some bizarre lawsuit with that song that there's like a little measure in the solo of the flute that somehow 25, 30 years later, someone decided was extrapolated from something else. And what a crazy fucking story. I'm sorry you had to go through all that, but I think that if that show didn't happen, that probably would have never happened. Is that a good assessment?
That's correct. Yeah, there was a show called Spicks and Specks, and they talked about Kookaburra Sits in the Old Gum Tree, which is an old which is an Australian folk song. And there were two lines from that song that were appropriated in Down Under, and unconsciously, but that didn't really seem to matter. But they became subsumed within Down Under to the point where no one really noticed for 27 or 28 years. But if you slow it down, people went, oh, that's what that is. So of course, the people who have the copyright to Kookaburra Sits in the Old Gum Tree at that time was a company called Music Sales, Larrikin Music in Australia. They started to, dollar signs started to spin around in their eyes, and they decided to litigate. So there was 6 years of litigation, and we ultimately lost. But they got given a very, very small percentage of not even the song, but just of a particular version of the song. So it was really quite a stressful thing for 6 years, and it was actually, there was really no need for it, but it was ultimately a kind of an example of one corporate, one large, one corporate structure suing another, plus me, and just being incredibly greedy and ending up with not very much at the end of it, so I'm glad it's done with, I'm glad it's over, and but it had severe repercussions, not financially so much, but it really went a long way to affect my friend Greg Ham's state of mind. So I'll never ever forgive them for that.
I also would think, which is weird, that there'd be some sort of fucking statute of limitations on saying a song sounds like another song 30 years later. It's like, how is that even like this? It's not like there's a possibility that they never heard that song. So it just seems so bizarre that it took so long before it became a problem. You'd think that would not be legal.
The copyright was still active, so that didn't work.
Right. Yeah, it's just insane. Yeah. It really is insane. And then by the way, a couple other things is that impressed me. I loved when you were on Larry Sanders, right? I mean, I was a huge Larry Sanders fan. But in watching an interview, I don't know if I'll get you to do this, but I was impressed on how good your Gary Shandling is. You do a pretty good Gary Shandling.
I wanted to come on my show.
Were you tight with him?
He was so great. That was one of the highlights of my life. And not only because I was on his show, but because he came to one of my shows at Largo. And as I was walking on the stage, he said to me, I'm not staying. I'm not going to stay. And I said, okay. I said, stay for a couple of songs. And then he stayed the whole night. And then I came off and he said, I stayed. I said, great. He goes, yeah, that was strong. Really strong. So yeah, he was the man. He was so great. I mean, every one of those episodes is like, it's a gem. It's like, it was extraordinary American television at its best,
Yeah, absolutely. A guy that I had on this show not that long ago that I became somewhat friendly with was one of his co-writers for It's Gary Shandling. In the beginning of that, his name is Alan Zweibel. He did the show not that long ago, and just great stories about him. What a fucking brilliant guy he was, for sure. I never got to meet him, but wow. Yes, James.
I was wondering, Colin, did you get to play basketball with him? Did you go to the? I mean, I know you're from Scotland and Australia.
I never was part of that that inner sanctum.
Did you try to get him to play cricket? Be like, you have your game with the comedians, that American sport. Come over here or some rugby.
I don't play cricket either.
Union league? Come on, rugby? None of it?
No. I used to play soccer. I used to play football. The beautiful game.
It is the beautiful.
But occasionally he would drive past. He would drive past my house, Gary, and he would be up at the top of the driveway, and he would just yell down. He would see me sitting on the stoop by my front door, and he'd say, "Hi," and I goes, "Are you sick?" And I go, "No, I'm not sick." And he goes, "Are you sure? I'm not going to come down. I think you might be sick."
Oh, crazy!
And he'd go, "Can we just talk from here?"
Why would he even be coming by? He was just driving by and he'd see you?
I don't know. He was driving by. Yeah, he was driving by.
That's so fucking great.
I don't know where he was or where he had been, but it happened twice where all of a sudden I saw him standing at the top of the driveway. He came down once, but I think that, I don't know, there's a lot of flu going around or something. I think you might be sick.
It's hilarious. God damn it. So then going back, you bring it up, the Largo shows became legendary in California. And then the creator of Scrubs, I've heard different stories on who actually brought it to Scrubs. But that was when I rediscovered Colin Hay, was when that, I think it was season two of Scrubs, that you went on and did that incredible acoustic version of Overkill. That, I mean, that you even said in that, between that and then getting on the Garden State soundtrack for I Just Don't Think I'll Ever Get Over You, that 1-2 punch really brought back who Colin Hay is in a lot of ways to people, idiots like me, that didn't even know you were still around. Does that make sense?
Yes, it was. Yes, that's correct. It was Bill Lawrence's wife, I think, had been to see me, but also Zach Braff. I met him at Chad Fisher's, actually, our mutual friend. And I met him at Chad's, and we were sitting there talking. He'd been to see me a couple of times and he said, I got this gig in this television show called Scrubs. I said, oh, good man. He said, I'm going to be the star. I said, oh, more power to you. He said, I'll see if I can get some of your songs on the television show. So I said, yeah, you do that. You do that very thing. So that's what he did.
That's really amazing.
The creator, Bill Lawrence, he became a little bit obsessed with the song Overkill. So that's why he wrote that episode called My Overkill, which was very, very nice of him. And as you say, did a lot for my, especially my live audience at that time, was great. And still is. I mean, there's still a lot of people who I seem to have picked up, new audiences over the last 30 years for various reasons. But that was a particularly valuable thing to happen in my life. Yeah.
All right. Before we go any further, I want to talk about one of our favorite sponsors on the entire Gas Digital Network. We're talking about YoKratom, YoKratom.com. Especially right now, we know every fucking price is going up. Gas, meat, Shannon, meat, rent, everything, fucking crazy. You know what hasn't gone up? Kilos of Kratom. You go to YoKratom.com, it's still just $60 a kilo, and you know you're going to get high-quality curated Kratom delivered directly to your door. Wholesale prices for high-quality Kratom. No more worrying about how long it's been sitting around at the fucking bodega. No worrying about, is it stale? Does it suck? Whatever. You go to YoKratom.com. You know you're going to pay $60 a kilo, and you know it's going to show up pretty damn quick. They have a ton of unique strains and custom blends. I know Shannon likes the train wreck one. That's what she uses. And it's just a great way to get that cool Kratom delivered directly to you. Just go to YoKratom.com. They're keeping those prices at $60. YoKratom.com. It's home of the $60 kilo. All right, let's get back into it. In watching a lot of the clips of you performing live and in watching the documentary, everyone refers to you as a storyteller. And I see that you tell stories behind every song, or stories maybe just leading in and out of songs. Was that always part of a Men at Work sets as well? Or is that something you developed later on in your career that became part of a Colin Hay show?
No, it was later on. I just... when I went from playing to, there used to be a little bit of that Men at Work, but not a lot, because it was, we were kind of a rock band really. But when I started playing solo, there were so few people in the audience that I think I sensed their embarrassment. They were a little embarrassed for me that there were so few people. So I just started to talk to them because it was like they were in my room. Rather than just kind of keep it, distance, just play songs, I started to talk about, what had happened to me. And as I would talk to people about what had happened to me, I kind of noticed that people would just kind of, instinctively just move a little bit closer. So it became somewhat conspiratorial. So my audiences and I think have enjoyed that ever since that time, of just being able to go, oh, yeah, well, okay, I know you've been here before and you've brought these other people, and I'll see you in a couple of years or a year or two. And that's what I've basically been doing for the last 30 years or so.
You know, it's funny. I was a strip club DJ for many years. And very often there would be like nobody in the club, like two or three people. And I used to say on the mic, it would be easier for me to just learn your names instead of saying, ladies and gentlemen, let's just say Steve and Johnny, why don't you do this? Like, is that so? Because I would be talking, how to act like I was talking to a room full of a packed people and there were two people there.
Yeah. It's like when you're, it's like when you play to nobody and you're, the only people that were there were your family, and you'd go, well, there's no point in saying, where are you from? I know where you're from. The same place I'm from.
Yeah, you're from the same car that brought me here. That's where you're from. Yes, James.
I would have liked if you would have been a strip club DJ to two people and done what Colin does, tell stories of the songs. That was 17 by Winger. It was written with a lot of...
funny thing really happened. Yeah, you'll enjoy this. This is a funny story. Shut up!
Yeah, yeah. That was Dr. Dre, and it took 6 years to get that out.
Before your next table dance, Amber, put your boobs away. I have a story to tell about the song.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a story about Pitbull, who we played 13 songs in a row. Yeah.
And then also, by the way, I'm just curious, because I know in 94, you kind of started your own label out of necessity, and it seems to still exist, but you are also working with Compass Records. Like, which one is it now? Is it there? You're working in cohesion with them, or what?
Yeah. I produce my own music, basically. Or to keep it simple, I write and record and create my own master recordings, and and I license those to Compass, and they release them. So it's basically a partnership of sorts.
Okay, so you've kept the Lazy Eye Records alive as the intermediary from you to them.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. That makes sense to me. All right, Shannon, we don't have all the time in the world, so we got to ask this guy the first, and then we'll wrap this up.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show, sir, is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked every guest this since the dawn of time. Your first experience with all three, and we start with rock and roll, and we ask, what was the first concert you went to? Hopefully one we're going to know, not some local Scottish or Australian band that we've never heard of, but maybe there is one.
The first show that I went to that I really particularly loved that had a huge effect on me was in Australia when I went to see Jose Feliciano.
Oh, wow. That was one of my dad's favorite artist.
Because he was so incredible, still is, but he just stood there on stage by himself and captivated, 15,000 people. Unbelievable.
That's wild. Yeah. How old were you at the time?
Oh, I was probably 14.
And were you already playing guitar at that point?
Yeah.
You played because of your parents, the music store, you started very young?
I started when I was about 12.
Okay.
Like that.
Wow. That's pretty wild. I'd say now the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed was the strongest drug or not the first drug?
Alcohol.
That's it? Nothing ever any stronger?
Oh, no, I did the cocaine stuff. I did that. But I thought you said the first drug.
Yeah, but I said after, usually alcohol and weed are usually one and two. So
well,
we say
alcohol. I came kind of late to alcohol in a way, but I developed an alcohol problem pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But I had to knock that on the head because that was my Achilles heel. But I was pretty straight all the way through up until my 20s, probably 25 or 26. So the first drug that I really loved was pot. And that was really in my early 20s. And then I discovered alcohol around 26. And so alcohol was the drug that I really remember more than anything else as being the drug that opened up the door to other more dangerous things,
Wow. So you kind of did it reverse. You did it. Most people do alcohol first and then weed. You were more into weed first and then discovered alcohol.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. That's a different pathway. And then the first time you had sex.
Well, that was, you mean, where was I or?
How old were you? What was the story?
Oh, I was
I don't need pictures, Colin. Just,
I was quite
don't need
old. I think I was 18 and, yeah, And it was that. What else do you want to know about that?
Was it a girl you were dating for a while? Was it a one-off thing?
Yeah, no, it was a girl that I was dating for a while. She was a beautiful, beautiful girl. Yeah.
Gary Shandling there. We need the specifics, Colin. Did he think that's why
you had to move? It was, she was very, very beautiful girl. Yeah.
All right, that's good to know. All right, so the new album is called Now and the Evermore. It's out now. If you go to at Colin Hay on Instagram or ColinHay.com, you'll find out all the tour dates. The Men at Work tour is also going to be happening in the summer. It's a few dates with Rick Springfield. But I say do yourself a favor, everybody, and delve deep into this man's catalog because there are some great fucking songs there. And also watch that documentary because that was fucking great as well. Anything else you want to plug, Colin, before we go around the room and do plugs?
No, I'm good. I'm good. That was nice. Nice talking to you and all that stuff. Going out with Ringo, like, as you say, with the Men at Work band. Have a look at the solo things, if you like, because that's a that's an interesting thing if you feel like you feel.
By
like
the way, I was all excited to see you because you're playing here in New York on the, I want to say the 12th or 13th.
That's correct.
That is the day that it's my mother's 75th birthday, and I have to go to Miami, but I was going to go see you, so I'm going to have to wait till... I'd rather go see a Colin Hay solo tour, to be honest with you. So I'm going to wait till you come around again. You usually do City Winery or something like that, but I can't go this year because my goddamn mom's turning 75.
You gotta go and look after your mama.
Yeah, of course. No, there's no way I would miss that. So I'm going to be flying out there. James, your plugs.
Yo, the James Madden on Instagram. Me and Shuli have a podcast called Thanks for Coming Out, a podcast about bombing where we talk to comedians and other people about horrible moments on stage where everything falls apart and the show's doing well. And also the Check Spot, the album is out. Me doing stand-up while people pay their bills. And the special should be done. I got a phone call in a minute. I think we're getting it out by June.
That's good. Congratulations, sir.
That special looks like a film noir and it's dope. So check that out.
Now the only time we let Shannon speak. Shannon, you're allowed to speak in front of Colin Hay.
You can follow me on Instagram. Jax loves it. You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, comedians, musicians, porn stars, reality TV stars, and they tell their own stories about their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience that creeped them out in the moment that they think may be paranormal.
All right. Now, Colin, we ask this to every guest, and I'm very curious about this. Do not react until all three of us plug in our answers. Does Colin Hay believe in ghosts? It's a hard one for me. I'm going to say no, James.
I think this is almost a coin flip, but I'm going to say 60% no. But I would be shocked if he says yes, but I'm leaning no. I'm going no.
And Shannon?
I'm leaning yes.
All right. And the answer, Colin?
Yeah. Is there a yes or no answer?
Yeah.
Elaborate? It's just simply yes.
Elaborate.
Or no?
No, elaborate. Please elaborate.
Well, I've never seen a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife has, and I believe her.
Okay, that's a good answer. So you do. So Shannon is Shannon wins.
Spectacular answer, Colin. That's
a good answer.
Best answer ever to that question on this show.
All right, and then follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness comes out every single Monday, called the Good Sugar Podcast. We're opening up our first location in New York City at the end of the month on the corner of 3rd and 69th, called Good Sugar. And we end the show every week by playing a song. We'll do Love Is Everywhere. We'll add it to the playlist at the strshow.com/playlist. I know you're probably going to say no, but I don't get a chance to have a conversation with Colin Hay that often. I saw the guitar behind you. Is there any way you'd give us the 30 seconds of you playing guitar or no? Please.
I just put these strings on, so let's see how they sound.
We have to play left-handed, Ralph, despite you.
Oh. I want to play one of my new songs. I just play a little bit of the old song. Traveling in a fryer, they'll come be. The hippie trail head full of zombies. I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. She said, "You come from a land down under."
God damn it, that was great. What a fucking great way to end the show.
Are you
and
the
I'll hold this up in honor of you, sir. And I actually enjoyed it. And I will add some to my next breakfast. Why not?
All right.
I will see everyone next time on the SDR show. Peace.
Listening to the SDR show.